Shabbat Shalom, this is Rabbi Jim Egolf. Thank you so much for joining me this week. This week we're going to delve into some of those just lovely Torah portions that find themselves in the middle of Leviticus, talking about leprosy, always my favorite topic. And we're going to see how leprosy is an issue not just in the Torah, but, well, it seems that we face a bit of leprosy in our society today as well. Stay tuned, I'll be right back, and we'll have a conversation about that. Thank you for joining me. Shalom. When we arrive at the Torah portions for this time of the year, all rabbis and writers who attempt to cast some gray lesson about leprosy tend to long for the days of Genesis and Exodus. And we can't wait for the holiness code in the Torah portion Kiddushim. The rabbis of old began to develop something called the Haftarah, or the additional reading on Shabbatot and festivals. Haftarah, not half of a Torah, by the way, readings, have a murky origin. What we know is that there was no mention of a Haftarah in the books of Ezra, which is when we have one of the recorded episodes of the public reading of Torah. Some trace its creation to the ruler Antiochus IV Epiphanes, when the reading of Torah was outlawed between the years of 168 BCE and 165 BCE. What we do know is that the reading of a Haftarah was a common practice by the times of the Sadducees and Pharisees. And in the book of Luke from the Christian Bible, chapter 4, verse 17, there is a historical reference to the practice. By the time we get to the Talmud, Haftarah is just a generally accepted practice. That is the lesson from history. Here is the practical application I see. I love the Haftarot. By the way, Haftarot is the plural of Haftarah in Hebrew. For these passages, I just think that we see some discomfort in the rabbis, and some of our own discomfort, at least I see in the rabbis, regarding the subject material. The Haftarah for this week in Tazria is the story of Naaman. And Naaman is a classic example of this notion that the rabbis aren't really as comfortable with the subject material as one might think. In this Haftarah, Naaman is a great and powerful warrior, but he is stricken with leprosy. He goes to see the prophet Elisha and seeks a way to be cured. Elisha tells him to go and bathe in the Jordan River 7 times. Naaman is not really keen on the idea. In his opinion, if the cure for his leprosy was bathing in a river, the rivers of his land are much nicer. Side note, the Jordan River is not the Mississippi in terms of scale. Naaman and his story are just filled with a certain irony, and he seems to want to judge the river by its banks. But eventually, he decides that he should at least try to do what Elisha suggests and bathe the 7 times in the Jordan River. Lo and behold, Naaman is cured by this remedy and accepts Adonai as God, but he has one problem. When he returns to his native land, he has to return to his job as a warrior, and this may mean that he has to bow down in the temple of Rimmon, for his master needs to lean on his arm when he worships there. Elisha, the prophet's response to him is, Lech l'shalom, go in peace. I love this Haftarah. Naaman's illness blinds him in a way that could mean the end of his career because of an affliction on the surface. Then, when he is asked to do something, he himself decides to judge the waters of the Jordan as inferior to that of his home. Only when he listens to the prophet, or his sidekicks actually convince him to listen to the prophet, and does the simple thing of following Elisha's direction, only then is he cured. Yet, in his cure, he must again face the problem of the appearance that he is worshiping at the temple of Rimmon, as opposed to just helping his master worship. Naaman is caught in appearances. He must wrestle with them. He must overcome his own need to judge. And then desperately he seeks to fulfill his oath to only sacrifice to God in the future, even though the appearance might suggest he is doing something else. It is rich, and it is so appropriate for this week. This week we remembered Dr. King's death, as well as his legacy, and the subsequent appearances that have either augmented or curtailed his dream. Dr. King could see dreams and valleys, and yet they were for him in the distance. They were detached, and not the reality of his life or his day. His last campaign in Memphis to fight for economic justice revisited us this week as I listened with great interest about the impact of the housing and mortgage crisis on the African-American community. In an interview between Farai Jadea and Raphael Bostic on the NPR program News and Notes, I learned that the minority community, which has experienced discrimination in the past in the area of mortgage loans, is now being hit by this new crisis in disproportionate number. Denied the ability to build equity like the citizens of a country that values equality, many minorities are the first to face the brunt of the subprime meltdown because they grasped for the American dream. I encourage you to listen to this program on the links in the show notes, for it demonstrates how the most vulnerable in our society continue to suffer from a lack of full and equal rights. The situation created by these loans is adding to the financial leprosy of people who have already faced discrimination for the color of their skin. Having served congregations in the Deep South where appearances are, well, often everything, I was reminded this week of my old stomping grounds. In Jackson, Mississippi, there was no lack of racial tension, but there was something that always bothered me. When the established white community spoke of civil rights, it was often in the past. And yet there seemed to be no lack of modern-day issues that revolved around the question of race. The problem with the leprosy of racism isn't in the color of people's skin. It is in the affliction that we must continually confront as a society. If we think that we have accomplished the goal of civil rights, we might want to inspect the color of our skin and make sure that those who look different from us agree. If we think that because there is a holiday marking Dr. King's birth, and that signifies that our country has become more tolerant, ask James Byrd, the African-American man who was drugged to his death by racists in Texas for the simple act of trying to hitch a ride. Until we live in a country where being civil is a way of life as opposed to a choice. Civil rights, civil right, has to be something that we live with, not as a historical footnote, but as something that we confront, face, and challenge ourselves to live to every day. I wish you the best of weeks. Shavua Tov.